You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
And I'm Brad Jackson.
Here we are, back in the studio, no road show this week. Back to our usual routine. sort of usual routine, because we're in the Nerd Cave North instead of the usual Nerd Cave South, so...
Yeah, trying to get used to the dynamics here. But more importantly, we've got a cigar in hand.
So what are we smoking this week, Brad?
So this week we are smoking the OPK, the Old Powder Keg from Battleground Cigars.
Actually, it's the Old Powder Keg Maduro.
The Corojo Maduro.
Yep. Which is definitely a darker, stronger version than their standard Old Powder Keg edition. The wrapper is actually rare Corojo Maduro with South American and Central American binders. And also South American and Central American fillers.
Yeah, and I gotta say, man, there's some nice woody notes coming out of this cigar. A little bit of an oaky flavor, too. I mean, this thing is just aged beautifully. And, I mean, it's so smooth. There's, it's got a little bit of power and a kick behind it. Right now, for the first third of the cigar, the spice has been... There's a touch of it, but it's been pretty minimal. So, I gotta say, man, this is a pretty complex cigar. I'm really digging it. My palate is pleasantly pleased. This is my first time having the OPK.
Yeah, I had it once before. It's pretty good. It's definitely not getting a whole lot of strength yet, but I think that's going to be something that's going to increase as it goes on. I'm kind of just getting the hint of strength to it, and also the name is kind of fitting with this week's topic. We're going to be talking about the Punisher, that rapper from the 90s, Big Pun. Actually, we're talking about the comic book and TV movie hero, if you call him a hero. The Punisher. So what better to go with Punisher than smoking a Battleground cigar?
Hero or not, it's the guy you don't want to piss off and be on his bad side.
True that. And this, it's also, we're smoking the torpedo version too, so it's, kind of looks like a bullet. Battleground bullets, it all goes with a discussion of the Punisher.
Absolutely.
And with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
If society won't punish the guilty, he will.
You see this board here? Every time he kills somebody, I put a red pin in it. So far, the only thing that I've got to show for it is these little calling cards here and a whole bunch of these.
Now, let me tell you something about this Punisher. If he ever shows up within 1,000 yards of me, you'll find out what the word punished really means.
He defends the innocent. But if you're guilty, he gives no warning and shows no mercy.
What the hell is this?
Trouble. Dolph Lundgren, Louis Gossett Jr.
Mr. P, happy hunting!
The Punisher. Justice with a vengeance.
And welcome back. Time to talk about the Punisher.
Yes.
Do you know the difference between justice and punishment?
I think I would prefer justice, because they're going to even if I do get the death penalty, they're going to fry me humanely or inject me with something, whereas the Punisher is just going to make life a living hell. So, you know, yeah, I think I would take the justice over the punishment. I don't have to worry about losing fingernail by fingernail or, you know, tooth by tooth or, you know, anything of that nature. Or, you know, spinning in a rotating, you know, glass-filled vat of, you know, shattered bottles stuff.
We'll get to that later on. Yeah, this week we're talking about the comic book character and, you know, now cinematic character of the Punisher, which is probably one of the most iconic logos of any comic. I mean, if you've never read the Punisher, you see that that skull logo and you know exactly what that stands for.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just been, I don't know, like, you know, the Punisher really hasn't got a whole ton of exposure in, you know, anything, you know, the outside of the few movies and stuff like that. So outside of, you know, keeping up with the comics and knowing the origins, but, you know, they've done a brilliant job of making him this iconic character. And like you said, you see that skull, you know exactly which character that pertains to.
Yeah, I mean, you see it on so much merch now. Like you see you know, Punisher t-shirts all the time. Well, you see it on gun, you know, the side of guns. You see it, even you see, like, you know, photos of, like, military units and stuff over in Afghanistan, you know, slapping it on the side of their vehicles. It's just something to say, yeah, you see this, you're fucked.
Yeah. Don't tread on me.
It means there's some, you know, some dudes about to do some violence on your ass.
Maybe, or maybe not, you know? Like, I don't know. Like, there's always kind of this big intimidation factor, but I don't know, you know? I mean, that's, I guess that's one of the beauties of the character of Frank Castle. He's, yes, he is very much a badass and has a propensity to, you know, inflict ultra amounts of violence and doom upon his enemies, but at the same time, he could be quite a dick and a smartass, and not actually hurt you at all, and just psychologically fuck with you.
And like I said, the character of Frank Castle, you know, in most iterations of it, he's an ex-cop, ex-military guy whose family was killed by mobsters, whatever, and he decided to take the law into his own hands. Which is very, you know, untypical for your usual Marvel hero. I mean, most of your heroes, you know, Marvel tends to be a little bit more violent than DC, but, you know, Punisher's racked up a pretty impressive body count at this point in comic history.
Oh, yeah.
Is, you know, like I said, you don't really see that in your typical superhero story.
No, I mean, most of these superheroes are, you know, good people that extraordinary events have happened to that have, you know, given them superpowers or, you know, whatever the case is. But, you know, with the Punisher, it's just, you know, he feeds off of, you know, that motivation, you know, to get his vengeance.
Yeah,
and
a regular human being who's just exceptionally well-trained and committed to doing what he believes must be done. And they've always done a good, I mean, that could very well be a villainous character, someone you can't care about, but, you know, writers have always done a good job of making you understand his motivations. So it's not, you know, he's not just a serial killer. You know, he's a guy who is doing what he believes is right.
Yeah, you know? I mean, he's lost everything, and, you know, I don't know, you know, until you can truly say you've lost everything and how you react to it, like, especially something as traumatic as, you know, a whole family, your children, the whole nine yards, like, you know, who's to say that he's going over the top? And that's what I love about the Punisher. It's, you know, like, yeah, he's a vigilante, but at the same time, like, how many times have you seen something and, like, man, that judge just gave that person a slap on the wrist or whatever? Like,
that, too, I think it's kind of typical of the time period that he started into, because it was the first appearance of Punisher was in Amazing Spider-Man number, was it 129?
Yeah, 129 with a cover date
in 1974, which during that time, we've got, there was a lot of vigilante movies and stuff. I mean, you had Death Wish, yeah, like I said, that late 70s, early 80s was like a time for the taking the law into your own hands, you know, freaking Dirty Harry type shit. You know? So I think he was kind of born out of that, you know, 70s, aesthetic. And he was technically not really a villain, but, you know, he started off kind of as an, you know, basically Spider-Man, I guess, was framed for a murder, and the Punisher mistook him as a criminal and was trying to take out Spider-Man, is how he kind of got started in the Marvel universe, and, yeah, has been killing dudes ever since.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I've always wanted to go back and read, you know, a lot of the Punisher origin comics and stuff like that. And I guess without finding them in digital print or subscribing somewhere, like, I just haven't found any shops that really carry a whole lot of, you know, the Punisher comics or anything to do with the Punisher. You know, you might find some of the, you know, a couple of, you know...
Yeah, I'm not sure if there's a current Punisher run or not. I've not read it in a while. I got... Like, the last time I read Punisher was probably back in, like, you know, the mid-2000 runs, and there was some weird stuff in there. There was a one-off series that was, it was like a what-if, and it was Punisher Kills the Marvel Universe. It was freaking badass. It was basically, they redid his origin story, where instead of his family getting killed in a, you know, crossfire in a gang war, they got killed in a superhero battle. And so he did, you know, blames, like, you know, basically the heroes and the villains, and pretty much kills like every person in the Marvel universe.
You know, I don't know.
There's like one part.
Would there be like a Punisher versus Deadpool? Like, I mean, could that be a thing? Like,
I don't think Deadpool is in that comic run, but there's, yeah, basically he gets hold of Ant-Man's like helmet at one point, and like pretty much all the Avengers are like hiding in Avengers Tower because he's like killing off everybody, and he freaking sneaks a whole bunch of explosive in, like, and then all of a sudden it just, like, you know, enlarges, and the room's, like, full of explosives, and, like, just blows up, like, all of Avengers Tower. And the only person who survives is Luke Cage, because his skin is, like, bulletproof, so he's like, you fucked up, man, you didn't take me out. And he's like, you know, you drink a lot of coffee. And basically, like, he had shrunk a whole bunch of explosives and put it in the coffee, so then he, like, exploded from the inside. I mean, it was weird, all the stuff he did. Like I said, he pretty much just wasted the entire... And it's all, and there's one part where they're like, there's a news article reporting on like the murders, and, you know, in the Marvel Universe, people always hate the X-Men, so it was like he had killed like two of the Avengers and like, you know, an X-Men or something. And the news part is like, it's like, you know, three heroes and an X-Men died today.
Just add that level of smartassdom, you know? No, that's funny.
And there was another weird one, too. Like, I think it's when I bailed out for a while, where there was a run where someone finally killed the Punisher and, like, literally chopped him up and threw him in the sewers, and he got resurrected by, Mobius, to be, like, a protector of the monsters. Because there's, like, you know, there's, like, monsters and supernatural shit in the Marvel Universe. And basically, Frank Castle became Frankenstein. So it was like the Punisher became like
Frankencastle.
That's pretty much what they renamed the run of the comic was Frankencastle, and he was, you know, Frankenstein's monster, and it was like protecting all these, you know, monsters from people trying to kill him. It was really weird.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, that's like I don't know. You know, I mean, you looking at the films, like. That's just not the way I visualize the Punisher. I mean, I understand it's Marvel. Marvel can do what they want and what universe and everything. But I mean,
at the end of the run, he was resurrected back to a normal person. But yeah, for that, you know, 6-7 issue story arc, things got weird.
It would make me lose touch with my psyche just a bit.
Like, yeah,
what the hell has really happened here?
I was like, these writers got to lay off the good drugs. They're starting to get a little bit weird.
Or maybe you go back to the good drugs.
Oh, but you know, he has, as you know, most superheroes at one point or another, made the jump into the cinematic universe. So let's talk about the first iteration of Frank Castle on the big screen. 1989's Punisher.
Yep. So, this here was not my least favorite Punisher. I actually kind of like, you know, Dolph Lundgren's Punisher. Only thing is, you know, I didn't feel as connected to the Punisher character in this film, but, you know, it was fun to watch just because of some of the over-the-top antics and gunplay.
It's so weird. Because, yeah, I always had like a fond memory of it, you know, because there's basically, I mean, this is came out in 89. There wasn't a whole lot of, you know, superhero movies. I mean, that, you know, Batman came out that same year. That was about it as far as, you know, big screen comic book movies. But yeah, this movie was directed by Mark Goldblatt, and it was actually an Australian film. It did not get a theatrical release in the U.S. because the company that was supposed to distribute it here went out of business before it ever got. So it got the theatrical release in, you know, Australia and, like, you know, the rest of the world. But here it was just a direct-to-video movie, which...
And I mean, for the American market, though, that's probably a good thing. I mean, there were a lot of things about, you know, this that, you know...
Well, I mean, it had Lou Gossett Jr. in it. I mean, dude's like, you know, freaking Iron Eagle, man. He's like a staple of 80s action movies.
But, you know... And speaking of terms of the Punisher, though, you know, there were iconic things that were missed, like, you know, or that were left out that I think, you know, the American market would have been like, no, this doesn't feel like the Punisher at all because, one, he doesn't have the shirt.
I didn't realize that until I went and rewatched it again. Like, yeah, they do not use the logo. And even like the opening sequence of the movie, it doesn't the writing of the Punisher doesn't look like the typical, you know, design of the Punisher logo.
And then, you know, there were. You know, some subtle changes to the, you know, origin story as well. So, you know, for me, I don't think it was a terrible film. You know, it was enjoyable. It's just not the Punisher that I have, you know, kind of grown and, you know, evolved to really, like, enjoy and love to see on the big screen.
I mean, as far as the action parts of it go... It was pretty cool. And, of course, it's an 80s movie. There's got to be ninjas. So he fights some Yakuza ninjas. And for some reason, he meditates butt-ass naked in the sewers. Like, it's completely, like, nonsensical. I mean, you see his nuts. Like, yeah, like, it's... you just see Dolph Lundgren's...
I want to go, like, to my happy place.
I mean, Dolph Lundgren's ass, like, you know, freaking meditating like a naked samurai.
I mean, if your life's gone to shit, what better place to go and meditate than the sewer?
I guess, but yeah, it was like, not only once, but twice do they show him naked meditating. It's like, Dolph has put that into his contract. He's like, yeah, you know, I have to be naked at least twice in my movies.
Dolph just turned Arnold.
they both have weird, like, you know, slightly Russian accents.
Yeah, so I don't know, you know, I mean, I thought this was pretty cool. I mean, you know, they give his body count of 125 kills up to this point.
Yeah, because at this time-wise, this movie takes place 5 years after he has become the Punisher, and everyone pretty much assumes Frank Castle is dead. No one really knows who the Punisher is, except for Lou Gossett Jr., which is his old partner, who's technically head of the Punisher Task Force, trying to track him down. He's the only one that believes that the Punisher is Frank Castle.
Which is kind of weird, because he doesn't disguise himself or wear a mask or anything. Like, you would think somebody would have seen or
anybody
picked up
who
on
sees
something.
Him, probably dead. So, he's like, you know, like, he says at one point, he's like, I've been tracking this dude for 5 years, and the only thing I've come up with is, like, boxes of spent ammunition and a whole bunch of these little knives. But the knives were cool. That was really the only Punisher-looking thing, is because it was like a knife with a skull on the tip of the handle. I mean, that was the closest they ever did to, like, showing the actual Punisher logo. And basically, he has, like, destroyed the Mafia so much they've become weak, and the Yakuza tries to take over, and they kidnap the kids of all the Mafia bosses to try to force them to cooperate. And, you know, Frank's had a soft spot for kids, so now he has to become the hero and rescue the kids and fight the Yakuza.
Yeah, I don't, you know, there were a few things in this film, like, during that whole progression of him trying to rescue the kids, and one of the scenes that really stands out of my mind is, you know, he busts into this casino, and literally, there is probably 3 minutes of consistent gunfire, like,
I mean,
you know.
He does have a belt-fed M60. I mean, those things have about 200 rounds per chain.
Well, I mean, I'm
so.
Just saying, like, you know, it
but
was
yeah,
just...
It's just...
Like, almost over the top, like, in a sense. You're just like... There's not even anybody in this building
no,
anymore.
No, he's
alive.
Just like shooting just, casino the yeah, casino up like, for what felt like 20 minutes.
Yes, I was just like, "Holy crap!"
I do like his weird informant, Shakes, which is a washed up alcoholic actor who speaks only in rhyme.
And
it's some weird Dr. Seussian shit.
Yeah, which was weird to me because I thought there was going to be an explanation of why that is or anything. Nope. Just dude's gonna speak in some rhyme. So
I mean, his name was Shakes, kind of like Shakespeare. So he had to speak in, you know, yeah,
Shakespearean.
But I do like when he lures him into the alley with a RC car with a bottle of booze in the back of it.
Yes, but I don't know. You know, another thing that really, you know, that just, you know, for me, it's like, damn, Punisher really is not that good of a guy. It's when the guy's in the freaking vat and there's all the bottles just spinning.
Not this movie.
No, which one?
We'll get to that one.
I thought it was this
no,
one.
No, it's not. It's Warzone.
Jeez. Yeah, we'll get to that. Like,
oh. But yeah.
I don't know. That's the bad part of watching.
Like I said, this movie, I mean, the budget was $9 million, but there's not really a figure for how much money it made because it never really came out in theaters, so there's not a box office, you know, quote attached to it. So, I mean, it doesn't really hold up if you go back and watch. But it's still a fun movie to watch. It's not the best version of Punisher, but
I enjoy it. I will say it's definitely not the worst that I've seen. So, yeah, I mean, it is what it is. You know, there were some things I would have liked to have seen, but you know, I mean. We got Punisher on a film, and, you know, in Australia we had Punisher on the big screen. You know, I think that kind of set the stage. I don't understand why it took, you know, almost 20 years before we got another Punisher film, but I don't know, you know?
Yeah, I mean, about 14, 15 years later, we finally get our big screen Punisher in 2004, The Punisher.
Yep, and this one, you know, here has Thomas Jane as Frank Castle. We had John Travolta. You know, in my opinion, this is the film that I really got behind, and it really felt like The Punisher. You know, I thoroughly was invested in the character. You cared about the character, and the character had some personality.
Yeah, this is like it was kind of based off a couple of actual Punisher storylines, Punisher Year One and Welcome Back, Frank. So it was directed by Jonathan Heisley, I believe his name, yeah. And it wasn't a huge success by, you know, modern Marvel standards, but it's also a lot cheaper. I mean, it was only $33 million to make. They made $54 million on it, so it turned a profit at least, but it wasn't $100 billion movie like our modern MCU movies are. But yeah, this right here was like it, you know, showed like what happened, you know, like with the other Punisher movie where it jumped right into him being the Punisher. This one started off with him as, you know, Frank Castle, undercover operative for the FBI, and not only did they kill his family, they wipe out his entire family. Like,
yeah, the extended family.
They basically raid him during a family reunion and wipe out all the Castles, which his dad was played by Roy Schreider, freaking Jaws. Him.
Yeah, dude, and that scene, you know, when the shootout happens and, you know, they're in the, you know, they walk into, you know, the room and you have the old, you know, 1911s and, you know, some of the shotguns and stuff. And I'm just like,
I'm pretty sure like a M1 Garand was on the wall, like that he killed like Jaws with.
Like, I was waiting for like, you know, it to pan back or something. And like in the corners, like the spear gun or something, like
really big, like shark jaw hanging on the wall. But yeah, those, 45s are pretty sweet. Cause that's usually like another iconic thing. Yeah. Him with the dual wielding 45s. But yeah, that whole scene was just brutal. He's the big bad guy. This movie is John Travolta playing Howard Saint, and he's like basically the mafia guy that rules, you know, Florida. And one of his sons get killed in this cop raid at the first of the movie, and then, you know, so he wipes out Frank's entire family for vengeance on his son.
And it's weird because it's not really even John that makes the call. It's,
yeah, his wife's
a psychopath. His wife, you know, and, you know, the wife's like, Yeah, I don't want just his children. I want his family, his whole family. Like
it's like Al Capone. Like, yeah. Like, I want him dead. I want his family dead. I want you to burn his house down. I want to go there all night and piss on his ass.
Yes, like, yeah, yeah. I mean, you almost had, you know, that Godfather sense there. But, you know, that to me was just, you know, one of those moments. And I don't know, it was kind of weird seeing John Travolta in that role, too, because I kept having flashbacks to Pulp Fiction.
Freaking Vincent Vega is going to show up at his house to kill him.
Yeah. Or something. I don't know, you know. But, I mean, you know, that was another thing that I really liked and I about this is, you know, it wasn't just, you know, the Punisher just murdering everybody. It's, you know, the tactics that he used, you know. The whole,
not only does he ruin his, like, literally he kills everyone and goes for Travolta last. I mean, he destroys his business, you know, by basically, you know, just, you know, keeping all his, you know, stealing all his money, blowing up all of his
and,
you know,
money making.
And he doesn't
even steal the money. He just, you know, basically goes in,
freaking throws it out the window,
start throwing it out the window. You know, and
just,
it was
just takes enough scene, for operating costs, you know, to keep him in guns and cars.
Well,
and then destroys
was,
everything else.
You know, funny in itself when, you know, he cuts open the glass and he's like, "All right, out the window." And the two guys are like, "Shit, you want us to jump? We're like 50 stories up." Like, it's like, "No, the money."
Oh, but yeah, then he you know, basically Travolta's right-hand man is his best friend, you know, enforcer Quentin Glass, who is, you know, secretly gay, but doesn't tell his boss. And Punisher comes up with this whole, like, scenario where and convinces Travolta that the dude is having sex with his wife, and he ends up killing both of them. Like, so he's like, you know, "I made you kill your best friend, I made you kill your wife, I ruined your business, I've killed the rest of your family, and now you get to die."
I mean, I killed one of your sons, and, you know, then you hear the explosion. Now both your sons.
Yeah, he's like, "You killed my son." He hears boom in the background. He's like, "Actually, I killed both of them." And that whole torture scene, too, where he gets, like, his basically the lowest guy in the organization and ties him up upside down and tells him he's going to, like, burn him with a blowtorch. And he's like, "Oh, it's so hot that it sears your nerve ending, so you don't feel pain at first. You just feel, like, cold." So he's, like, burning a steak with a to make it smell like flesh is burning and keeps poking him with a popsicle in the back.
I mean, that's what I was saying. Like, you know, like,
"Oh, you smell that? That's some fat cooking off." I mean, he's just such a dick.
Yeah, yeah, that scene is just awesome. I don't know. It's kind of weird seeing the guy from Jurassic Park 2 in this film, because I'm like, you're dead. You got spit on by a dinosaur and your face got bitten off.
Again, not this movie.
Jesus. All right, well, whatever.
That's what happens when you try to watch every movie in one night, dude. They start blending together.
No.
This one had...
It hasn't been one night. I mean, hell.
Rebecca Romijn Stamos, because, of course, you know, they always have to, you know, try to tease, like, some kind of possible love interest in one of these freaking hero movies.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know. You know, that whole lineup was kind of cool in a sense. You know, I like... You know, he's got the old muscle car, and he's out there just wrenching away.
Bulletproof, you know, GTO judge.
Yeah, I know. That shit was almost like some Mad Max shit, you know.
It was badass,
fucking,
yeah.
You know, windshield covers and everything. But the whole scene with the big Russian dude, like, that was...
Played by Kevin Nash.
Yeah, like...
That scene was so hilarious, because, like, you know, his neighbors are... basically singing opera music and cooking, and he's in this, like, huge fight that are just going, like, all over the apartment, and, like, yeah, grenades getting thrown around. It's, like, the most brutal, like, probably 20 minutes of, like, a fist fight.
Like, some of that shit almost, like, you know, almost had, like, a Boondock Saint feel to it, you know? Like, that's almost what I was, you know, envisioning at times. I don't know, like... You know, there's two scenes, like, that really, you know, still, like, make me cringe a little. One is the wife and the son after they, you know, get pursued, you know, by the guys in the Jeep when they're trying to get away while they're on the island. And, like, they run out to this pier and they both get run down. I'm like, fuck. Like, That would suck. I would like to think that I would just go to the side and jump over the side of the pier, but, you know, instead of trying to make it to the end.
Yeah, you run to the one spot that there is no escape. I mean, it's a pier. It's a dead end.
Well, I mean, but...
Well, they were trying to get to the grandfather's boat or whatever, so yeah, that does make... But then again, there's a whole, field of cars at their house that they could have chose from. And in fact, the mom says, let's get in the Jeep. No, they jump in the GMC Blazer that is towing a boat. The slowest getaway vehicle there.
It is a little boat.
Still.
So, you know, some bad choices were made. I mean, you know, so that one there kind of sucks. I'm like, damn, you know, I wouldn't want to be ran down. And then the other one is, you know, while they're at the apartment and dude comes in, you know, Quentin, and, you know, fucking starts ripping out homeboy's piercings, like, one by one. Like, that scene there, I'm like, oh, I've had facial piercings. That would really suck.
Oh, yeah, but the dude didn't break, so you gotta give him props. Yeah, and when Frank hits the Russian in the face with the boiling water, and his face is just all melty, and then he, like, you know, tackles him down like a staircase and breaks his neck. He gets up like, I'm cool, I'm fine, and then passes out. I do like when they're trying to like give him first aid, the one guy's like, I know what he needs, and runs and grabs like the bottle of whiskey.
Yes.
And he just like grabs it out of his hand, and like the guy's still holding the cork and just jerks it out of his hand.
Chugs half a bottle and
yeah.
That's enough. That's gonna do it. And it's like, I don't know. He looks weak.
Like, he reaches something, grabs the dude, and he's like,
oh, things may not be as they appear.
Yeah, I mean, because it could have been, you know, dark throughout, and it had those good, you know, comedic moments that kind of, you know, lightened up the mood, so it wasn't as dark as, say, you know, the original Punisher, or the one we're talking about here in a minute, that you keep, yeah, forgetting what parts happen and where.
I remember. I just don't remember in what order.
But and also, my other favorite part is the first assassin they send after him, Harry Heck. Which that's another thing. Maybe there's a deleted scene that that they needed to put in there to explain stuff. But how did they ever figure out where the hell Frank lives?
I don't know.
There's never a scene of someone like giving him up. They just like, oh yeah, he's that dude that lives down the street. You know, with the oh, yeah, let's go. It's like they just show up. Yeah, you know, it never explains like how they found out about him and stuff.
Is Harry, who's the guitar player that meets him at the diner? Is that Harry?
That's Harry Heck.
So, I mean, that was one scene, like, that had Johnny Cash, like, written.
Yeah, like, all the first time I seen that, I'm like, is that, like, Johnny Cash? Because.
I mean, he shows up in the guitar case, and you see Frank get on edge, like, this motherfucker's about to pull out a.
He's about to go full desperado and have the guitar case full of guns, but now he actually has a guitar.
That's kind of what I was waiting on, but, you know, I mean, I love that, you know, song, and everybody's just like, really? Like, you know, what the hell's happening
here? He's like,
here?
I wrote that song for you. I'm going to play it at your funeral. And then, like, walks out, and then, like, later, you know, after Frank leaves, the guy tries to run him off the road and kill him, which is kind of funny, too, because, like, Frank gets away because he's in a bulletproof car, but then he ends up wrecking the car to keep from hitting a kid that runs out in the street. So he's, like, laying, you know, the car's all flipped up, and... Yeah, you know, he can't get to his gun. The guy's like walking up on him with a shotgun. He pulls out a freaking knife, and he's like, "Boy, you bring a knife to a gunfight!" And it's one of those ballistic knives where the blade actually shoots out of the knife and catches him in the neck. And then he takes his car. So he went from the GTO to the freaking Barracuda. Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the things that I liked is I'm a sucker for the old muscle cars. So, you know, I'm like, yes, that's exactly what should have happened. No, you shouldn't have wrecked your first car, but. You kind of made up for it.
And, you know, and this one, too, you know, he finally looks like the Punisher with the T-shirt and the you know, sculpt. You know, because basically that's how they introduced the logo, is it's a shirt that his son bought for him while they were in the Bahamas or wherever they were supposed to have been at the family reunion. Because he's like, it's supposed to ward off evil. And that whole final scene, like after he like completely destroys Travolta, you know, he ties him up to the back of a car and just lets it ride into a car lot that he also owned, and he had like all the cars rigged to blow, but as they're exploding, you know, the camera pans up and the exploding cars have made a burning Punisher logo in the middle of the car lot. And he gets that cool, like, epic speech at the end where it's, you know, yeah, Frank Castle is dead. Call me the Punisher.
I don't know. I also like the, you know, kind of the rules of engagement that he reads off and everything. Yep. I mean, that was, I think that the closing scene, like you just talked about with the, you know, yeah, Punisher skull in the flames. You know, those are probably the two, like, things that most people are going to take away from that movie, I think.
Yeah, because, like, you know, don't,
what really stands out.
Don't miss, you know, because that whole final scene, there's, like, this voice over him explaining his motivations and stuff, and he's like, it's not revenge. Revenge is an emotional response. This is, you know, there's special times when, you know, the law is not adequate enough, and you must go outside the law. He's like, this is punishment. This is not revenge, you know.
So,
and then later on, he did, because as we'll talk about in a second when we talk about our next film, Punisher Warzone, Thomas Jane did not return as the Punisher, but he still loved that character so much that he did a kind of a short independent film. It was like a 10-minute film. You can find it on YouTube. It's called Dirty Laundry, starring, of course, Thomas Jane again, and also cigar nerd Ron Perlman.
Yeah, and I gotta say, man, that short film was freaking awesome. Like, I mean, when they announced Punisher Warzone and, you know, they didn't cast Thomas Jane for that role, I was like, you know, through the theatrical variations of the Punisher, or the cinematic versions, that's the Punisher I identified. That was the fucking Punisher.
I mean, he actually cared for the character. I mean, you could tell that he, you know, and really respected the character and wanted to portray it. And just this, you know, that little movie he made, I'm like, I would have loved to have seen an hour and a half version of that if he had been allowed to make a full-length Punisher movie. But it's basically, it's almost like his day off. He's doing laundry, a.k.a. the name Dirty Laundry, and just, you know, he's like in regular street clothes and stuff, and there's like this gang on the street that's basically just totally terrorizing this town, and it keeps messing with this kid, and finally, you know, Punisher just keeps like, you know, my day off, I'm doing laundry, ain't gonna do nothing. And he kind of goes to the liquor store and buys a bottle of Jack and then beats the gang to death with a freaking bottle of Jack. And then pours Jack Daniels all over the guy. And he's like, do you know the difference between justice and punishment, or vengeance and punishment, or whatever? And just lights the Zippo and just puts it on the ground and walks away. And then one of his victims comes up and grabs it and sets the dude on fire.
Yes. Like, I don't know, you know? I mean, like, it's those story arcs like that that almost make you feel conflicted, because you're like, you know that that's not the way that the justice system should work, but at the end of the there is no truer form of justice. Like, you know, there is no turn the other cheek or second chance. Like, you fuck up, you pay the price.
I do like toward the end of it too, because there's no kind of overt thing that this is the Punisher. He drops the shirt when he's taking out his laundry, and the kid that he saved is like, hey, dude, you dropped your shirt. And he's like, I keep it. It's got a hole in it. And as he gets in his van and drives off, the kid, like, unfolds the shirt, and it's the Punisher t-shirt.
Yes.
And there's a bullet hole in it.
Yeah, and I don't know. You know, Perlman as the liquor store owner was pretty good. I mean, I don't, like you said, if they were allowed to do...
He has a pretty good monologue, too, in that sequence.
So, you know, what's your choice? You can sit idly by and, you know, take things as they come, or, you know, you can truly try to make change in the world.
Yeah, and like I said, he was supposed to be in the Punisher sequel. It was going to be called Punisher 2, and it took a very long time to make, and pretty much Thomas Jane was signed on to do it, but then eventually, you know, the original director bailed. He got tired, you know, the studio kind of left for creative differences, but Thomas Jane was still trying to make it happen up until pretty much they turned in the script and he saw what a turd this next movie is going to be, 2008's Punisher Warzone, that he was like, I'm not sweating and wasting months of my life to create something that I don't feel is going to be good. You know, is basically how he said it. So yeah, he was like, once he saw how, the direction the studio was wanting to take with it, he's like, yeah, I'm not doing this. And so they, instead of being Punisher 2, they changed it to Punisher Warzone and kind of did a reboot of the series, directed by Lexi Alexander, starring English actor Ray Stevenson as the Punisher.
Yeah, I gotta say, man, like, at no point in this film did I feel emotionally attached or connected with this character.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, that's you've got to kind of care what happens to the Punisher, and this
this film did not capture the feeling, the emotion, or, you know, just, you know, some of the, oh shit, that was pretty cool, like the action sequences of Thomas Jane's Punisher. Like, this, like, in no way, shape, or form, like, it really felt anything like the Punisher. Like,
it felt like a video game.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'll say that the way the film was shot, like, you know, kind of looked cool. It looked like a comic book movie.
Yeah, I mean, he looks like the comic version of the Punisher. So, of the three movies we talked about, sorry, this one is probably the most comic booky of the movies. But, like, there's literally 30 minutes. I looked at the freaking clock before the Punisher ever has. I swear, Ray has, his script of the movie was one page, because the dude barely talks the whole thing. And that kind of works in the comic books and stuff, because we have, like, Frank's voiceover, so you can kind of get what's going on in his head and stuff. But on screen, 30 minutes is a long time for your lead actor not to say anything.
Yeah, I mean, it was just weird. Like, you know, and I don't know. For me, I felt like during all of that, it was a slow start. Like,
yeah.
You know, we picked off, you know, our you know, almost went backwards in a sense. Like, you know, we left, you know, Thomas Jane's Punisher in a blazing fire of glory, only to come back, and it's, like, so slow for the build-up and the action sequences to even begin. Like, it almost made it difficult for me to get through this film.
Oh, yeah, it's pretty bad. And, yeah, it made, the budget was $35 million. It only made $10 million. I mean, it was a huge flop. It also had, that's probably my biggest complaint. Like I said, it had the potential to be good, because, like I said, it was the most comic book looking version of the Punisher. I mean, it looked like what you think the Punisher looks like in the comic books. But Ray Stevenson, man, this he had no emotion through the whole movie. I mean, he was so, like, monotone, like, in his emotional reactions, and it, like, this movie could have literally been played by the Terminator. And I'm not talking about Arnold Schwarzenegger, I'm talking about the robot, because that's pretty much what this dude is, was an emotionless automaton of death.
and that it was, I mean,
and even the action sequences were so ridiculous. I mean, there's some, like, guys who work for the, or for a second there, let's talk about Kurt Sutter also did a draft of this script, but took his name off the movie before it came out, because pretty much he was like, the only thing of my script that made it into the film was Jigsaw's origin story, which was the thing you were talking about earlier, where, you know, after Punisher takes out a bunch of the guys, his main bad guy ends up retreating to this recycling plant, where Punisher takes out a whole bunch more guys, and this dude gets tossed into the glass recycling grinder that grinds up all the broken beer bottles, and he just lets the dude get ground up to, like, fucking mincemeat in this glass vortex, which he survives and becomes Jigsaw, because basically he looks like freaking Frankenstein's monster. He's all freaking sewed together through the rest of the movie. But yeah, one of the most ridiculous scenes is there's these three guys that are, like, delivery men for this gang that are drugged out Jamaican parkour experts that are running from, like, rooftop to rooftop, and there's, like, one point where one of them jumps across a building and does, like, a you know, tuck and roll. Well, the other guy jumps and goes to do this, like, flip in midair, and Frank takes him out with a rocket launcher. He's like, they're all watching him do this epic flip, and then poof. Just it was the weirdest, most random segment.
Like, I don't know. Like, you ever been duck hunting?
That's why I say this movie reminds me of a video game. It's
like, you know,
it's full of video,
like,
game
I'm
logic.
Just waiting on, like, feathers. Like, you see the poof, and then it's feathers.
Oh yeah, I mean, there are a few, and then like the big final battle, basically the antagonist turns like informant basically, and he's like, well, I was about to sell this, help these guys smuggle in a bioweapon, so if y'all let me go free, I'll tell you about this guy. So basically he gets all this money from this sale and turns the dude into the FBI and stops like basically a terrorist attack and gets away scot-free. So of course the Punisher's going to come after his ass. So he takes all the money and hires like every gang in the city, the Chinese gang, the black gang, the Irish gang, and holds them all up in this abandoned apartment building to protect him. And so the Punisher has to go through and pretty much fight an entire gang of people like floor by floor to get to the main bad guy. It, like I said, the movie is full of video game logic.
I don't know. I just,
including a boss battle with Looney Bin Jim, which was another just weird ass character.
Yeah, it just, I don't know, man. I don't know. Jigsaw's origin story was cool, but everything else, I was like, I really don't have a whole hell of a lot of clue of what's going on. Like, you know, I mean, it was just, you know, and then too, like, I mean, I don't want to just shit all over the film. Like, you know, yeah, it's somebody's work, time, effort, you know, I mean, I'm sure that, you know, people put a lot of, you know, heart into this, but, you know, it just did not feel that way on the screen whatsoever. Like, I think for as much potential as there could have been, like...
Yeah, I mean, there was a potential because, like...
And, I mean, it sucks, too, because this is the first of the film to be produced under the Marvel Studios and Marvel Knights production banner. Yeah. So, you know, like, I wonder if, you know, now Marvel, you know... If that, you know, sets us back and, you know, some of the big screen
stuff.
It's
been a long time before we get, you know, another 8 years before they even try to do another Punisher. But yeah, they, because it had potential, because like the underlying theme of the movie is he accidentally kills a cop when he, because there was an undercover cop in this mafia organization and he kind of feels guilty about it, tries to take care of the dude's family, you know, pretty much decides he's going to retire as the Punisher. Until he decides that, you know, the person's family is at risk, and that's what brings him back to being the Punisher. But they were not able to portray any of that emotional weight and turmoil. Like I said, the dude had no emotion through the whole movie.
Yeah, well, I mean,
I think a better actor could have probably, you know, or a better writer could have maybe portrayed that inner turmoil better than what they did.
Yeah, well, I mean, even the scene, you know, when they're on the front porch, you know, what you're talking about, where, you know, he, the agent that he's killed, his daughter, like, you know, it's just the Punisher and the daughter sitting on, you know, the front porch, and he's having a conversation, and the mom comes out, like, why the hell are you here, you know, get away from my daughter, blah, 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 you know, and the daughter either really doesn't know what has happened or whatever, but it's kind of like, all right, what the hell is going on? So, you know, the mom holds the Punisher up at gunpoint, and, you know, she's, you know, kind of like aiming for his head or something. He's like, no, aim here, you know, for the heart. And I'm like, throughout that whole thing, it's just like so emotionless. And I'm like, there was so much opportunity I felt for that scene that was just not portrayed properly or something.
The only good part I would say is Wayne Knight, and you know, from Jurassic Park and Seinfeld, as Microchip, which is the guy in the comics who pretty much built all the weapons and toys and techs for the Punisher. And I thought it was kind of cool bringing that character into it, because somebody from the comic books, we didn't get a lot of comic book characters other than Frank in the previous movies. So like I said, this was the most kind of comic book version of it, but yeah, one guy can't make a crap movie good, but I did like the scenes with him. I thought he was kind of cool in the movie. But other than that, like,
yeah,
so
I mean, he's always, you know, that part was good. I will give it that, you know, because I mean, he was a quirky kind of character. I mean, you know, not having a whole lot of the comic book background, you know, I was kind of like, I would have liked to have maybe had a little bit more of his origin or a little bit of backfill, you know, for folks that maybe aren't as familiar with the Punisher story arc or anything. But Yeah, I mean, that was a pretty big highlight, you know. Like I said, it was kind of weird, though, because I kept having flashbacks to Jurassic Park, and that's just because in this convoluted brain of mine, like, hey, at least I didn't say there was big-ass dinosaurs running around. Like,
I did like the one part when this FBI agent goes to the Punisher Task Force, and because I never say what his body count is in this movie, but... You know, he's like, yeah, I want to help you out. And the guy's in this basement that's full of freaking evidence boxes and stuff, like as far as you can see. And he's like, all right, well, where's the file? And he's like, what are you talking about? You know, it's like the Punisher file. He's like, this is all the Punisher file. Like the entire room is evidence from his crime scenes. Yeah. And he's like, oh shit, this dude's racked up some bodies.
Yeah, all the evidence, all the stuff, and you know, people are like, who's the Punisher?
Yeah. And then we get into, you know, not a live action, but a pretty good animated version of the Punisher. Marvel started doing kind of a Marvel anime series where they were letting, you know, Japanese anime houses do Marvel comic stories. And we got Avengers Confidential, Black Widow and the Punisher.
Yeah, so, you know, this
2014.
Was, you know, direct-to-video, which can be found on Netflix now until probably we release this podcast and I'll have pulled it down for some unknown reason. But as of right now, you can find this on Netflix. And I gotta say, man, this was kind of cool, you know, seeing the Punisher, like, you know, at odds with, you know, Black Widow and, you know, some of the other Avengers and stuff, and then how they all... you know, kind of meshed together. Like, you know, it was actually really enjoyable.
Because basically someone has stolen some technology from S.H.I.E.L.D. and are building these super soldiers, and they're like, S.H.I.E.L.D.'s like, it's too much of a risk for us to get involved because apparently there's also some mind control elements that these people are using, and we can't risk the Avengers getting taken over by this stuff. So you and the Black Widow, you know, aren't super powered, so y'all have to track these down, take them out. You know, and Frank's like, I'm going to kill everybody. I don't need y'all's help. But they're like, no, Frank, you need a babysitter. And I did like, too, that, you know, typically in movies like this, they always going to try to play up the, you know, when there's a guy and a girl working together, the romantic element. And there was none of that. You know, it was basically a buddy cop movie.
I mean, it was, you know, in, you know, the first few minutes of the film, like, you know, I mean, that first fight, you know, before, you know, Nick Fury ever shows up to kind of, you know, defuse the situation or whatever, like, you know, it was, you know, the Punisher taking shots and stuff. And, you know, I was wondering, I'm like, this guy has never really missed a mark. Like,
no.
You know, so it's like, all right, he doesn't necessarily...
He's like, if I want you dead, you would be dead.
...want to kill Black Widow, but it's like, they're definitely not friends.
No. And, you know, she's kind of flirtatious, too, because that's kind of like Natasha's things, always using her sex appeal kind of as a weapon. But Frank has none of that. Frank does not give a fuck.
He reached into his pocket, found zero fucks.
Exactly. And
until
he
pulled out his custom 1145s.
It plays more like a buddy cop movie, where at first they don't like each other, but they learn to respect each other and you kind of actually become partners through the course of the movie. And then at the end, you finally get like some Avengers, you know, you get Iron Man, Hulk, Thor, Captain Marvel and some other people. So yeah, I liked it for a direct-to-video animated movie. It was a pretty badass depiction of the Punisher.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that was one of the things that, you know, I liked, you know, and like I said, it was cool, you know, seeing Fury and, you know, the fact, too, that, you know, eventually, like, you know, the Punisher gets locked up and Fury's, like, you know, holding a prisoner and the Black Widow goes and actually, like, sets him free. It's like, all right, you know, we've got our differences, but we've got to kind of work together.
Yeah.
And we've got bigger fish to fry.
You know, at the end, they try to arrest him, and she lets him go, and she's like, "Hey, yeah, the world needs you. Yeah, I do stuff my way, you do stuff your way, hey, but yeah, both of them gets the job done. So, bye." Yeah,
yeah. I don't know. I mean, that's you know, one of the things that I really enjoyed. You know, so I don't know, for folks that are into anime, and the other thing too is like the animation style and everything didn't feel too over the top. Like,
yeah.
Japanese anime.
I've watched all the Marvel anime series. I definitely recommend checking those out. There's an Iron Man one. There's a Wolverine one. There's a and I think there's an X-Men one. There's even a Blade Marvel anime, and like I said, they're it's pretty badass.
Absolutely. So
that brings us to
something else that was badass.
Our most recent depiction of Frank Castle, this season's, which they should not have called this Daredevil season two. It almost should have been Punisher season one, because really, you know, this season of Daredevil has been the Punisher origin story.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, the dude's in almost every single episode, so it, like I said, to me, it was more, you know, season one of Punisher than it was season two of Daredevil.
And I guess, you know, with some of the news that we'll be talking about later on in the episode, I think it was by design.
Yeah, and any Walking Dead fans, this version of the Punisher played by Jon Bernthal from The Walking Dead, and he was in that movie Fury, the tank movie. Badass depiction of Frank Castle.
Yes, I really like John's method. I don't know. You know, Thomas Jane is up there, but, you know, after this most recent depiction, I mean, I'm almost feeling, you know, that John may be the new Punisher, you know.
I mean, they made you care about the character, too. They justified, at least you saw how it was justified in his mind, you know, what he's doing. You know, he has no regrets. You know, to him, all his actions are completely justified. And they did a good job of showing that in his character. And I like it cool because, like I said, this is the origin story. So at first, you don't see the traditional skull and all that stuff, but they keep teasing it. Like,
oh, and they tease it hard too. Like, you know, you're like, there were so many moments I was like, oh, they're gonna debut it, they're gonna, and then it's like, no,
because yeah, they start off by when they're showing like the evidence the police have, and they have a x-ray of his skull where he had gotten shot when his family was killed, and it looks almost like the Punisher skull. And then later on, because like I said, of course, Daredevil's a lawyer. Frank eventually gets caught and arrested, and they try to defend him. But he ends up in prison, and they're like, you need to take out this you know, mafia guy or some shit. And, you know, basically tricks Frank into helping Kingpin. And he ends up taking out, like, an entire cell block of dudes. And one guy, he freaking stabs in the face or whatever. He, like, falls on him. And when he moves, there's this bloody imprint of a skull on his t-shirt. It's like, oh, I was like, dude, oh, shit, it's coming. It's coming.
That prison fight scene, man, it was just so badass, too. Like, was, you know, I don't know. I really loved how... I mean, like you said, this should have been, you know, dubbed Punisher Origins or something, because, yeah, you had, you know, Murdoch, you know, and Daredevil and stuff, but, you know, this was really a setup, you know, for Punisher to have his own series.
And those interactions, too, where he had him tied up and they were just talking back and forth, it was pretty cool, because he's like, dude, you're one bad day away from becoming me. I mean, he's like, you hit these guys, you knock these guys down, and they get back up. I knock them down and they stay down. You know, like, he's like, you know, and he tries to get him to cross the line. He basically like sticks a gun in his hand and he's like, I'm going to kill this dude here who is a murderer who has killed people, you know, and the only way to stop me is to kill me. But yeah, of course, Daredevil, yeah, slips out of it, but yeah, he tries to like get him to like cross over to his side of his way of thinking.
Yeah, and I mean, that was just such a good dynamic, you know, between the two, and I love the tie-in.
Like, yeah, and just giving each other,
you know,
giving
I mean,
shit the
I was
whole time too.
I was super stoked, you know, for Daredevil season two, but then after watching it and seeing, you know, how much of that actually, you know, revolved around the Punisher and how the Punisher tied into Daredevil, and you know, that whole, you know, just Hell's Kitchen in general. Like, I'm like, Hell's Kitchen's not the place you want to be.
And I did like the interaction with him and, what's her name, the girl that works for Daredevil. You know, it, like I said, that's kind of how they got you into the whole, like, you know, understanding Frank was their interactions and stuff. But there's, like, one part where she's like, you tried to kill me. He's like, lady, like, I'm a, like, Marine recon. She's like, what does that mean? That means if I wanted you dead, you would have been dead. There, like, it's like, I, you know, I was a sniper. Like, no, there's, like, Yeah. Oh, yeah. What I did was purposeful. You know, I didn't let you escape. You know, it's like I was not trying to kill you.
Like, I mean, that's what I love about, you know, the Punisher characters. Like, you know, if he's got a mark on you, like, best believe, you know, you're a dead
man.
And
when he finally takes out the guy who killed his family and finds, like, the guy's hidden weapon stash, and there's that bulletproof vest that kind of looks like the skull, you're like, oh. And then, like, finally, you see him painting it up, and he shows up with the trench coat, with the skull logo, and it's like full-on Punisher sniping ninjas.
I was waiting, you know, that whole scene with the ninjas and, you know, Daredevil out there. Like, I'm just waiting on, you know, Castle just to snipe every one of the motherfuckers. But he's like, yep, yeah, dude's got it. Like,
I kept waiting because, like, the scene before that, you see him leaving his house when he's finally, you know, after he's killed everybody, he goes back home finally, and he... You know,
goes into the workshop.
And
oh,
then
my God.
He you know, he kind of sitting there like, my work is done. Yeah. But then he eventually is like, no, I've got vengeance for me, but there's other people that need vengeance. I'm going to become the Punisher. And, you know, you see him walking out of the house with a freaking minigun. So I kept waiting for, like, when Daredevil runs out on the roof and there's, like, 100 ninjas out there, then all of a sudden Frank to start mowing him down with a minigun. But he's more like, no, I'm going to let him. This is his fight. I'm going to stay out of it until he starts losing. All right, now he needs help. I kept waiting for that freaking minigun. I was like, and I did like the very like episode one where you see the Irish mafia guys and you think they're going to be the new bad guys for this season. There's like a big like speech about how we're going to take over the city, and then they all get gunned down. It was just completely unexpected.
Yeah, no, I mean, I loved it, and, you know, like I said, this should have been Punisher Origins or something for all intent and purposes, but,
yeah.
You know, I mean.
Yeah, those interactions, too, because, like, you know, Daredevil pretty much thinks he's a criminal, too, but they eventually, you know, kind of respect each other, and he's like, you know, he does it differently, but he still does, you know, the right thing in his own twisted way.
Absolutely. So, you know, which of your Punishers is your favorite?
Pre-John Bernthal, I would have to say Thomas Jane. I loved his depiction of it, but now I'm kind of torn because I'm looking forward to seeing how the character progresses and if we get him eventually into the full, you know, Marvel Cinematic Universe. I would like to see him... Yeah, portraying that character on the big screen. I think that would be pretty badass.
Yeah, I was, you know, I wasn't quite sure about John Bernthal, you know, to begin with. You know, when it was first announced that he would be playing Punisher, I was like, all right, you know, The Walking Dead killed him off several seasons ago. But, you know, after seeing it, I'm really conflicted. Like, you know, I still think probably right now Thomas Jane... But, you know, with the progression and some of the announcements that have come up, I don't know. You know, I mean,
yeah, with
I
the
think
original...
back to Thomas Jane. I mean, that's been over a decade ago. You know, that was 13 years ago, you know, and...
Yeah, with the original announcement, I was like, I mean, he's done some military movies and stuff. He's played, like, a cop. Yeah, so he has, like, the physicality of the role, but I didn't know if he had the emotional gravitas to play the... Yeah, to not end up playing it like Ray Stevens did. But I gotta say, after seeing his performance, I'm sold. The dude did an excellent job of you know, making that character badass and relatable, which is hard to do with basically a serial killer. I mean, that's basically what the Punisher is.
Yeah.
But well, you want to cheer for him. He is the good guy.
I mean, not necessarily. I would say he's an anti-villain. Like, but it's, you know, once again, there's... Morality can be questioned at times, but, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, as long as you're not a scumbag, you're probably going to be all right.
And as we kind of wrap things up, so what do you think of this cigar we've been smoking?
So the OPK, man, I got to say, I have thoroughly enjoyed this cigar. You know, we're actually recording much earlier in the day than when we typically record at night. You know, a post-launch cigar, this has hit the spot.
Yeah. And I mean, also, shout out to Mike Dixon, who next up will be an interview we did with him a couple weeks ago. He actually brought us these cigars to try, and I'm enjoying it. I got to get some more Battlegrounds.
Absolutely. I think out of the Battleground cigars I've smoked, this is probably my favorite. I think I would put this on a medium bodied. I don't think it's quite as full as some of the cigars that I smoke regularly, but for a post lunch and a cigar that I can sit down, I can relax. I mean, this has been very enjoyable. It hasn't been
boring. I could have another one. It's not overpowering, but it does.
Exactly.
It's definitely on the higher end of the medium spectrum.
So if I was going to have a 3-4 cigar day, I would make this, multiple cigars through that, just to kind of break up from, a super powerhouse. Like, this is just so well balanced, and the flavors are complex, and, I gotta say, as far as the construction, the amount of smoke, and then the aroma that it puts off, just all comes together, and it's been absolutely awesome.
All right, and with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
I can hear what you're thinking, all your doubts and fear. And if you look in my eyes in time, you'll find the reason I'm here. And in time, all things shall pass away. In time, you may come back someday to live once more or die once more. But in time, your time will be no more. You know your days are numbered. Count them one by one, like notches in the handle of an outlaw's gun. You can outrun the devil if you try, but you will never outrun the hands of time. In time there'll surely come a day. In time all things shall pass away. In time you may come back, some say.
And now it's time for Blowing Smoke.
And welcome back to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. This is our Blowing Smoke segment where we sit down with cool people that has cool things to say. And today we have Mr. Mike Dixon, a.k.a. the Cigar Rhino. How you doing today, sir?
Howdy, howdy. Doing good.
Yeah, he's also brought us some interesting things to sample before we get into the interview proper. We've
lots
got some
dangerous things.
Very dangerous items today.
So what are we smoking today?
Today we have the Battleground Cigars Armistead, which is called the Widow's Son. And this is a special blend that they made for the Masonic community in conjunction with some Masons up in Enfield, Connecticut. It's really good.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm definitely digging the smoothness of the cigar and everything. I mean, this is, I don't know. I mean, I would say this is a nice medium full, I think, right now. Like,
yep.
And I don't know. A lot of woody notes. Just really good all-around flavor from this.
And it pairs nice with the other thing Mike brought us, some Lead Slingers whiskey. If you're one of our Georgia listeners, good luck finding this.
Yeah,
it's not available here yet, but it needs to be soon because I think I'm officially hooked on this stuff.
It's very dangerous. It is so smooth that you drink it and then you realize what you've been drinking and you're sipping it like sweet tea.
Yeah.
And you go, oh wait, that's liquor.
Yeah, I mean, it's got great flavor, but it doesn't have that that afterburn you get on a lot of whiskeys. I mean, like I said, that goes down smooth.
It's almost like a blend of bourbon and scotch.
Yeah,
it has that this sort of the smoothness to it as it goes down. And like I say, it's not available in Georgia yet. It's still very new to the market. Been around for I think I've been getting it for just about 6 or 8 months.
Yeah, it's big in from going to their website. It's big in Texas, I think Arkansas, New York. There's some in the surroundings. South or North Carolina, I think, has a few distributors.
South Carolina, yeah.
Yeah, it's you know, a veteran owned company. If you ever watch the Article 15 Matt Best videos, these are, you know, their company.
Yep.
It tastes like freedom.
Matt, Rocco, and JT. It absolutely does. It tastes like liquid freedom.
So, how did you get into portraying the rhino at out in events and on the Facebooks, Instagrams?
Yeah, so it's a pretty good story. Well, at least to me, it's a good story because it started off innocent enough. You know, I like going to Dragon Con, and then for the last decade or so, I've been just adding more cosplays to my arsenal, and I try to go authentic, and unique, and try to do things that you don't see like 50 of these.
Yeah,
and the drawback to that is because you don't see like 50 of these, people are like, I don't know who you are. the company's called Ranger Up, and they have a YouTube video series called The Damn Few, and it's a cartoon that portrays the military, and each branch of the military has an animal that represents their branch. So there's
I think the Blue Falcon episode is probably one of my favorites.
Love
That's
it.
Freaking hysterical.
So they have the Bulldog is for the Marines. Sealy the Seal is the Navy. They have Ice Goose is the Air Force pilot, and the Army is Rhino. So Rhino is for the Army. And the first episode I watched, I fell in love with this character. And about 5 minutes after I finished watching, I was like, I have got to figure out a way to cosplay Rhino. And I found a company up in Canada that does a lot of custom masks. They're called North Fur FX. They do custom masks for a lot of like the Shrek productions and things like that. And another gentleman does a Rocksteady, got his Rhino mask from there. And I sent him a picture of Rhino. I said, hey, can you guys make this? And they said, well, it'll take us a little while, a couple of months, but I think we can custom make you one that looks like the Rhino. And I was like, oh, please, please, please. And so I put the uniform together to match, and I found the right patches for it, and I went to the Ranger Up website and ordered like their patch for the other sleeve.
Yeah.
So then I got it all put together, and the first time I posted a picture, I think I put it on Twitter, and I tagged Ranger Up in it. And they had no idea that I was doing this, no clue. And I posted it, and it turns out that the voice of Rhino in the cartoon is the CEO. It's Nick Palmisano from Ranger Up.
Nice.
He's the voice of Rhino.
Hold up, sweet.
And I started getting these messages back like, no way. There's no way. It's Rhino. Rhino lives. So then I was like, well, I'll come out with you guys. I basically built it to go to Dragon Con, yeah, and some of the other things. And they were like, well, come down to Mobile Aero Fest and go down there and hang out with the vets and do different things. So for about the last year or so, I've been going to things like, of course, Dragon Con.
Yeah.
And I went to Mobile Aero Fest. And I just came back from the Beer and Bourbon Festival down at Fort Benning with the Ranger Benefit group. It was doing a Beer and Bourbon Festival to benefit the National Ranger Association. Just walked around as Rhino for the entire episode thing. And I was getting pictures with, Ranger Schlitz, Michael Schlitz, and pictures with all the other people. And it's awesome. And I just love doing this.
Oh, yeah, it's great when, cosplay, but can do some good in the world too. It's not just something for us to stumble around in at Dragon Con. It actually, there's several cosplay charity groups. I mean, the 501st does a lot of charity stuff. But yeah, it's kind of cool that you love this character and that it became a thing.
Oh yeah,
you got to be part of kind of the official mascot almost.
Yeah, almost. almost. I'm not an official
mascot.
Yeah, it's unofficial. So I'm not an employee. I'm not in there. I do a lot of benefit work with them and things like that, as far as promotional things and going out and doing giving back to the veteran community and doing as much as I can. But I am not an employee of Ranger Up. I am not officially with Ranger Up.
It's one of those, the Vaya con Dios. We don't support, but you have our permission.
Yeah, you know, as long as I don't do anything that would embarrass the company as I'm portraying the character. But, you know, if you know Rhino, the character, it's kind of hard to top what they do in the video for real. So
as long as you're smoking cigars and drinking whiskey, like, all right,
Yeah. But, you know, so I did get to go, I got to be Rhino in the upcoming movie, in the Range 15 movie it's made by Ranger Up and Article 15 got together and put together this zombie comedy movie, and I got to be Rhino in the movie, and it's so awesome.
That is freaking sweet.
Yeah, this is an awesome idea. Like, I've seen a little bit of it, and it's basically a comedy horror movie, but, you know, are all the actors, like, you know, ex-military, or is, like, a good portion of the people behind it, all the way from, you know, the writers, producers, directors, you know, down to the extras, are all military people, or, you know, military-associated
absolutely, people. Yeah. Yeah, you know, all the way through to, because it's an independent film.
Yeah.
So the initial funding came from Ranger Up and from Article 15. They put in about $500,000 each. Well, not each, no, $250,000 for Article 15, $250,000 and one from Ranger Up, because he had to be a Ranger Upper. And
nice.
So they were the initial, and it was an independent, it was an Indiegogo campaign, and the military community just jumped all over it. You know, initial goal was something like $325,000 to raise to actually make the movie, because it's got, you know, it's kind of a big budget film with, you know, explosions and guns and, you know, everything, and being very realistic about it. And we ended up, I think it's closing in the next couple of days, but it's over $1 million.
Nice.
And it was the fourth highest funded Indiegogo movie in the history of Indiegogo.
Especially for something that's not got, like, a quote-unquote big-name celebrity behind it. You know, this isn't, like, Zach Braff's next movie or something Christian Bale. This is something, you know, a bunch of veterans and veteran-owned companies, like, wanted to do for the community and for, you know, their own enjoyment, because who else is going to make this movie? I mean, it's one of those things, like, if you want it, you've got to make it yourself, because there's no way, you know, anyone in Hollywood's going to be like, yeah, let's do this.
Well, that was the thing. So they got Ross Patterson to come in as the director, and they're looking at the script. And I think Nick says they did something like 26 rewrites from the initial script all the way through to where it's like, this is done. And they were sending scripts out to the agents and the actors, trying to get people to come in, and you know, and they were getting responses back, like, from the agents, like, I cannot give this script to my client. You know, it hasn't, you know, every page has fuck on it. You know, can I say that on the show?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so every page has the word fuck on it.
We can't go 2 hours without saying it. We just go ahead and tag it explicit, because there's no way we're going to make it a full
Usually issue we screw that one up usually within, like, the first 15, 20 seconds.
Okay, so I'm good to go here. Yeah. So the at last count, the final edit, they went through with the clicker, you know, like the counter.
Yeah.
It was something like 242 times that they say fuck in the awesome. Movie. It's like the fucks per minute is off the chain, nice. is what Nick says.
Is that a new record? I don't know what the...
It's number seven. It's number seven. So it's independent. So they went out and they got some... so the Article 15 guys are in it. The Ranger Up guys are in it. And then they got, like, Leroy Petrie and Clint Romache, both Medal of Honor recipients.
Nice.
They got Tim Kennedy, Special Forces sniper, MMA fighter. He's in there. And then they started going out to, like, the Hollywood celebrities. Like, who can we get to be in this that won't be offended? And it was really hard to find the people that wouldn't be offended by it. But then they started getting things in. So, like, William Shatner's in it.
Of course. Like, the Shatner will do anything. Shatner's
in it. Sean Astin's in it. So nice. We've got he's in there as a pilot. Danny Trejo's in it.
Hell yes.
That is fucking sweet.
So they started getting, you know, these people that were coming in and they wanted to be part of it. So then it was, you know, all the extras, you know, like you were saying, it's veterans, it's combat veterans. So all, like, the main stars, these are, like, guys that have been, you know, they've seen war.
Yeah.
And they wanted to be in. We got, like, some of the zombie scenes, a bunch of guys that came in. I mean, they're, you know, amputees and things like that, but they were like, we want to be part of this, we want to be in here, so zombie me up. And, you know, and one guy's like, you know, he's both legs were like zombied up, like bloodied up, and he's like laying on the ground, crawling across the ground and things like that. And there's one guy in a wheelchair, and he's like rolling down the street in a wheelchair, like, ah.
That's hysterical.
It's hilarious. It is going to offend so many people that just think, like,
be so awesome.
How can you make a movie like that and make fun of these people? And it's like, no, they're making fun of themselves.
Yeah, because I mean, if anyone,
I mean, that's like rule number one of comedy, right? Like, you know,
you got to make up fun of yourself. And that's one of the funniest things I saw on. I saw a fairly liberal friend of mine that has no clue what's going on posted this thing, and it was like. And it was a clip from an MBEST11X video. I think it might be like "You Might Be a Ranger If" or "You Might Be a Veteran If" video. Oh, and like yeah. Somebody pops a balloon, and they all go like full tactical ready.
Yes.
And she's like, "This is wrong to make fun of people with PTSD. These people are, you know, like." And I'm like, "You do know all those guys are veterans, and that's from a veteran YouTube channel. Like, you are an idiot."
Yeah. Go, I dare you to go if on their anybody page and can say
make,
something like
make
that.
Those jokes. They have the right to.
Yeah, and their latest videos, so there was that one with the PTSD. They did one that was for the home invasion.
Yes.
Did you see the home invasion one?
Yeah. Finally, it's happening!
Finally, the moment we've all been waiting for. And the liberals went nuts over that, like, oh, I can't believe you do, you gun-loving, whatever. It's like, oh, go away.
That's like my background on Facebook for a long time was like a picture of an AR, and it was like, the hardest part about the zombie apocalypse is pretending I'm not excited.
I have that shirt.
Truer words were never spoken.
So what was your experiences like playing the Rhino in the movie?
So the weird thing is that I was just going to take, I was going out, they asked me to come out. It was 4 days of being an extra. Yep. And they said, we're going to do an opening bar scene, and then we're going to do some zombies. You might be a zombie, you might be a soldier, you might be a hazmat guy. We don't know yet. So come on out. So the first day so I was like, well, I'm going to come out. I'm going to bring Rhino. And, just when we're not on set and doing scenes, I'll just be Rhino and walk around and hang out with the celebrities and do promo shots and pictures and things like that. So the first morning we're there at this bar in LA, and we're going to do this scene. And, I was like, you guys know, I have Rhino in the truck. And they go, oh, hang on a second. And then like 5 minutes later, here comes the guys. They're like, if you want to, you can put Rhino on and be in the bar scene. I was like, no way. You're going to let me be in the movie as Rhino? So I get to sit at the bar. It's like this whole big, night of debauchery scene. And there's a whole bunch of little things that go on throughout that opening thing of just craziness going on. And I'm sitting there with my, caffeine and hate and sometimes whiskey mug and full Rhino sitting at the bar, and just the debauchery continues, all around there. That's where the scene with Ron Jeremy is.
Nice. That is
if
sweet.
That tells you anything.
If that doesn't get this movie an Oscar. Oh.
But it's awesome. So I have pictures. So that was the only time I was in the movie as Rhino. This opening bar scene. I was in a couple of scenes as a zombie, a couple of scenes as a hazmat guy. But I got to hang around, off camera.
Yeah.
In Rhino, and got pictures with Trejo. Got pictures with all the big stars and the people that were there at the time. And with Rocco and Matt and Nick and all those guys. I had to get one with Nick because you know he's the real voice.
That is so. What was his reaction for the first time, like seeing you live in that suit?
Oh, it was hilarious! It was absolutely hilarious. We were at the first time they saw it for real was Mobile Aero Fest last year, and there was a big hangar that they were setting up for an MMA fight, and Ranger Up had a booth on the far side of this hangar, and. So they had never seen it for real. So I come walking across the floor of the hangar. They're all falling out of their chairs. They're like pointing and laughing. And just, oh my God. Oh my God. It's like, it is so surreal to see Rhino walking across the floor, just pointing at everybody. Hey, how you doing? How you doing? And I wish I could do the voice. I wish I could do the voice.
Just need to record a bunch of his lines and like have it like in an iPod or something.
In a player.
Just make a little playlist of his common phrases. That's going to be trippy for something that you kind of created to become like real life.
It's awesome. And So at Dragon Con last year, I was walking. So, you know, the uniform is, it's a full uniform. Yeah. It's got the actual Ranger patch on it, and it looks realistic. So it's got a full pistol belt, everything. So I'm walking towards the Marriott, and it's late at night. And I'm walking, and you know, I got the helmet on, and it's kind of hard to hear, and the sunglasses, yeah. And it's nighttime, and I'm walking, and from behind me, I hear, "Hey, Ranger!" And I was like, "Oh, dear, here we go." And I turn around, and there's a Ranger behind me. He goes, "Holy shit, you're the Ranger up Rhino." Oh my God. Cause he couldn't see the face from the back. He was just going to, you know, like rip me a new one because I was wearing, you know, like proper Ranger outfit, like the whole, you know, Stolen Valor kind of thing. He's like, "No fucking way." So we get like pictures and things like that. He's like, "I was going to tear you such a new one for Stolen Valor." I was like, no, dude. He's like, no, I know. No, this is so awesome. And I ran into him again down at, the Beer and Bourbon Festival. So he works for a tactical AR-15 armament company, Lansang Tactical, here in Atlanta.
Nice. Yeah, so now that the new Ninja Turtle movies is coming out, and there's, you know, what's it going to be like this year when there's like 15 freaking Rocksteadies at Dragon Con? Are you going to fight for who's top Rhino?
Well, if you've seen the guy,
especially the scene where he's in like a tank, I'm like, they just like ripped off your look.
Dude, I am so excited about having Rocksteady in the upcoming movie and the way that they've portrayed it, and it's just like, so I like took a picture, I took a screen grab from one of the videos, and I looked at it from the side. I was like, that's Rhino. that's freaking Rhino. Wait, my horn's bigger, so. But he's bigger. He's got bigger muscles and stuff, though. But yeah, so if there's more than two, we might have to have a Rhino off or something. I don't know how you do that.
Oh, yeah, or how many like kids?
Everybody get a sumo suit and just battle it out.
Oh, I'm in for that. I'm in for that.
Or how many kids are going to come up that are not familiar with Ranger and be like, "Oh, it's Rocksteady."
That happened last year. They're like, "Hey, Rocksteady." I'm like, I just go with it. I don't want to educate them on the damn view. So I'm like, "You're a kid." Yeah, I'm Rocksteady.
You're too young to know about this.
I'm Rocksteady. I just give them a thumbs up and walk away. Hey.
When you're old enough to buy your own cigar, I'll explain to you the costume.
There you go.
Did you come down to the cigar meetup last year at Dragon Con?
I did.
That was some damn smoky.
that was at Trader Vic's. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. I was in the Dungeon Master costume. I made the what's the name of our group?
The
Dragon Con
Cigar Group.
Yeah. I made the D20 for them.
Oh yeah, that's
yeah.
That thing was badass.
Yo, that was super sweet.
Oh, yeah, it was hard to breathe at that thing. they need some more fans or something out on that patio.
You didn't need a cigar because there was secondhand smoke. It was like you were breathing it, you were tasting it, you could chew the air.
Yeah, because we came out from inside the hotel, and as soon as like you opened the door and walked on the patio, it was like a wall of smoke.
Oh, yeah.
It was like, I think I see my friends. I can't tell.
Everybody's got a cigar. They're all my friends.
Yeah, I talked to Ignacio the other day, and supposedly there's a new like speakeasy bar is supposed to be opening up down there, and he's trying to, if it's open in time for Dragon Con, he's trying to see if he can set our meetup up over there. Cause it's supposed to be somewhere not far from the Dragon Con host hotels. That would be an interesting location.
This is the first year that I did not secure a room by this point of the year.
Yeah. Yeah. We just got our media passes. So I was not planning on attending this year. Cause I'm like broke and I'm like, damn, I gotta find a hotel now. that's the hardest part of Dragon Con every year, is trying to find somewhere to stay once you get there.
I've been getting more and more involved with it, especially the classic track.
Yeah,
I Joe Crow and Gary Marshall it's Gary Marshall, right? That crew, the whole classic track crew, because I'll be 50 soon, so. I was everything that's old and classic, or as we call awesome. I'm all about that. So, like I said, I've got a Colonial Warrior costume. I hosted the Battlestar Galactica panels last year with Richard Hatch and Terry Carter. So I hosted those in full costume. And that's with the '70s motocross boots and everything.
Yeah, we need the original Starbuck to show up. He needs to come to Dragon Con. I mean, Face Man and Starbuck.
Yes.
He would be the hero of Dragon Con.
Yes, very much so.
So we need to get some actual, like, cigar-smoking celebrities to show up at our Dragon Con cigar meetup this year. I know there's a few smokers that show up. We need to, like, you know, talk to some agents. Like, yeah, invite your guys down. There's going to be some, yep. some cigar smoking going on.
Yep. And I brought you guys the cigars. Like I say, you know, so
oh,
with,
yeah.
with my Colonial Warrior costume, I went out and found out what cigar Dirk Benedict smoked as Starbuck on the original series. And
Flor de la Alones?
Especials number 5, I believe. But that was like, you know, of course without the wrapper, but that's what he had on yeah. set. So I bought like a whole box of those just to use for the costume. So those enjoy those.
We're going to have to watch some old Battlestar while we yeah. Now I'm just going to figure out what Hannibal smokes.
I mean, that may just be the perfect, you know, segue into doing a Battlestar episode.
Oh, yes.
Well, that's one thing we have not done yet. As we kind of wrap things up here and go back to smoking and drinking, where can people follow you and find out about your shenanigans?
I have not created a public image kind of page yet. I probably should, you know, because I've got a bunch of different followers as far as Rhino and the Dungeon Master. Those are my two biggest.
And you have the one on Instagram. Was adventures. It Rhino Mike? Or
yeah, yeah. On Instagram, it's Rhino_Mike. On Twitter, it's at Bullitt172, BULLITT172, which was the serial number of my Bullitt Mustang that I had from 2001.
Nice.
That is sweet.
And do you know when the movie's actually going to be, you know, released?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So let's jump back to Range 15 real quick. So it because it's an independent movie, and it basically this movie it, from start to finish has been fuck Hollywood, because when Hollywoodn't, we yeah. did. It is being released through a company called Tug. And what they do is they go out and work with theaters, and they book the event. So like on Wednesday, June 15th, that's the opening day. In select theaters. So if you go to tug.com, T-U-G-G.com, you'll be able to see all the theaters and all the show times, and you buy your tickets in advance. And it's like private showings, basically. But yeah. it's like at Carmike Theaters and Studio Movie Grill, and I'm trying to get one at Regal Mall of Georgia.
Nice.
But they do those in advance. So once they sell the number of tickets they need to make that event happen, then they start opening up more events. It started off being in 250 theaters around the country, and they opened it up to what we call the Range 15 militia and said, you know, if you guys can get us more theaters and get more events going, here's how you contact Tug and get them to open it up. So now in 2 weeks' time, we're up to 300 theaters.
And we'll post links to all that, you know, in our show notes. So, yeah, go buy some tickets for this thing so we can find a place, you know.
Yep.
nearby that we can go see it.
And here in Atlanta, you will be having showings. Atlanta and Athens. So there's two theaters in Athens as well. So you will be having showings where Rhino is going to be there. And I will have either pre-movie showings or parties or post-movie parties. But you need to drink while you're watching this movie. If you can be offended in any way, shape, or form, you probably don't want to watch this movie. If
challenge
you want,
accepted.
If you want to,
yeah, I'm pretty sure the cigar nerds are going to be there at least one show.
So
this is the movie we definitely have to see.
So tickets are going to go on sale starting April 20th. So you can go on tug.com April 20th, and you'll be able to see the theaters and the showings, and it's going to be all over the country. They're even talking about doing a USO tour because nice. the overseas military is just like all up in arms, like we want this movie, bring it to the you know such and such base, such and such base,
and this should go up like. Just after that, it should be up by the end of April. So they will be on sale by the time you're hearing this. And like I said, we'll post links to all that stuff in the show notes. Also, check out was it rangerup.com, range15.com. Was it article? It's art 15. Is art-15.com?
No, it's article 15.
Article 15.
It's article 15 clothing is the yeah. the line.
And YouTube MBest11X on YouTube. That's oh, where yeah. you see all these funny ass videos. And like I said, it's. They do good things and they also make you laugh your ass off. Bitch I Operate is probably my new favorite rap song.
Oh, absolutely. So
look that one up while you're on YouTube.
Yeah. The other places you can, so it's Range 15 Official is the Instagram channel for Range 15, and they're posting, you know, behind the scenes clips and, or not clips, but, you know, different things. So on Facebook, it's Range 15.
Sweet. All right. And with that, we'll be right back.
Hey man, it's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Booze Hounds return.
And welcome back to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. It's time for Beer 30.
Yeah, man.
So what we drinking on this week, Brad?
Well, to pay homage to all the folks that have been punished, there was no beer that we found more fitting than Three Taverns Brewing, The Departed Spirits. And I don't know, man. This is a Russian Imperial Stout, comes in at a 10% ABV. I think it's, you know, roughly 60 IBUs for the International Bittering Unit. Yep. So, I think this beer is kind of cool because basically they took the 8-year-old bourbon barrels from that they use for aging one of their other beers, Theophan the Recluse.
Now, this started off as a Theophan the Recluse, and they aged it in bourbon barrels to, you know, make the Departed Spirit. And basically the Departed Spirit is kind of a reference to the, you know, bourbon that, you know, once was in the barrel.
So, you know, I don't know. You know, I got to say, like, the pour from this beer is black as the Ace of Spades.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got a very good aroma. Definitely, you know, some notes of, you know, vanilla and not as much, you know, coffee or anything as I would have thought.
Yeah, I still get a little bit of that coffee flavor from the stout. But yeah, there's definitely that sweetness and vanilla of the bourbon and, you know, some, you know, the notes of the wood from the barrel.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely bourbon. Definitely woody. And this has a dry finish. Like that almost took the saliva out of my mouth. Like, still kind of making it a little bit difficult to talk, just, you know, how dry that finish is, but, you know, it's really good. And then on the back of the palate, just a touch of that coffee. But you know, the woodiness and the vanilla notes and, you know, some of that warmth and the bourbon taste are the most, you know, prominent and definitive notes. Man, beer's already kicking in.
Yeah, we're probably going to have to go get lunch after this segment because this is a big boy beer at 10%.
Yeah.
You drink one by yourself, you might be just a little bit drunk.
Yep. So if you guys are looking or folks are looking for this beer, you know, Three Taverns is local in the Georgia market. They're based out of Decatur.
And this is a limited release beer. This is the 2016 edition, and so it's just released. It's only available in the spring to summer months.
Yep.
So get it while you can.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is one that I definitely will be putting on my list to try again. I'm always a big fan of the Russian Imperials. So.
Yeah, it's kind of weird that this is a... Yeah, because typically your stouts are kind of considered more a winter beer, so it's kind of strange that this is a spring summer release. But I would definitely enjoy this beer whenever I could get it.
Absolutely. So, any further notes?
Drink another.
All right. Well, we're gonna have another round, folks.
And what are we gonna rate this on the official Cigar Nerds Untapped app?
I think I'm at a, 4, maybe 4.5.
Yeah, this is definitely a solid 4. It's, like I said, it's different than a regular Russian Imperial. I like the bourbon notes that's been added to it. So I'd be interested in trying. I don't think I've had the you know, Recluse that this was made from. So I'd be interested to try that dick and compare to see how the barrel aging has changed the flavor of the beer.
Absolutely.
And with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
If this were some tavern tale, all half-truths and senseless adventure.
And it's full of demons.
And it's full of demons.
'Twas disastrous.
It's coming, people. It's coming.
Pitchforks, get your pitchforks here. Can't kill a demon without your pitchforks.
Torches and pitchforks.
No defense. You better defend yourself.
No matter how you spend your life, your wit will defend you more often than a sword. Keep it sharp. Have I got some shit to tell you?
I gotta practice my killing.
Let the wicked hear my voice and tremble.
Fly, you fool. Fly.
You have to pick a side. You stay on your path, or you cross over to me.
I wanted to get inside so badly I could taste it.
Upon him I will visit famine and a fire, till all around him desolation rings, and all the demons in the outer dark look on amazed and recognize that vengeance is the business of a man. Caster Quest. Now on the ESO Network.
ESO! ESO!
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome to Nerd News. We got some exciting news going on in both the TV world and the little streaming video world, I suppose. And then, you know, some DC news that's pretty exciting. And then, you know, some other random tidbits. So here we go. So we just came off of talking about the main topic of The Punisher.
Yeah.
So Netflix has confirmed that there will be a Punisher spinoff.
Yeah, up to this point it's all been rumor and conjecture, but now it is official. And like it had to be the way, I mean, basically they used Daredevil season 1-2 as a pilot for The Punisher, and like I said, the critical and fan response have been so huge that they would have been stupid not to give him his own series.
Well, I think it works. I mean, you know, introducing the Punisher with the Daredevil film, and you know, there was a lot of the origin, a lot of the backstory. I think it's awesome because now we're not going to have the first season of the Punisher origins, like, or at least I don't think we will. You know,
no, we've kind of got that out of the way, unless they go back and show like, you know, his family getting killed, but they've kind of already covered that. I think we're just going to jump straight into him on his quest.
So John Bernthal will come back as the Punisher. You know, folks will recognize him from probably Shane the Walking Dead. He was in, what was it? The tank film.
Fury.
Fury, that's it.
Not to be confused with Nick Fury, starring, what was that? The Hoff.
The Hoff, yes. Man, I think we need to do a Hoff episode or something sometime, and just all the random roles that he's played throughout the years. And that gives us an opportunity to talk about Kung Fury again as well. But
maybe when the Baywatch movie comes out, we'll do that.
Jeez. But I'm super stoked. I really like John's representation of Frank Castle and everything. You know, he was a very good actor.
Yeah, I mean, the Netflix series has been killing it with all of the Marvel stuff they've done so far. So, yeah, I'd like to see them eventually make the jump into the larger MCU. But, yeah, that's...
I mean, right now, it's been really awesome. And I like the fact, too, that, you know, they're not limited, you know, as far as content, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, they don't have to worry about, you know, language or different topics or anything.
It's just so much darker than the, like, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. That has to you know, be a little bit more family-friendly. I'm loving it. It's because the comic books have always been more violent, darker than what we've seen on TV.
I mean, there
were
a reason they were called graphic novels, you know? And like,
so, yeah, these are actually, you know, pretty close to, yeah, the source material.
Absolutely. And then, you know, I really like the fact, too, that I really think it puts Hell's Kitchen truly in perspective. Like, how fucked up, how bad this place really is.
Yeah, that and, you know, the whole thing of, like, you see references to the larger MCU in the Netflix series, but you don't really see the rest of the MCU referencing that stuff. And it kind of, all this is happening in one neighborhood in New York. It's not, it doesn't have worldwide implications, so it kind of, you know, it's kind of a way S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Avengers can overlook the shit that's happening in Hell's Kitchen, because it's a local thing. You know, it's like, to them, it's like, yeah, it's, let the police handle that shit. You know, we're dealing with the Hydra,
like, global and global worldly threat. Disasters. Yes, like, these are truly end of life events that we're dealing with here.
That too, and it also, I like the fact that it kind of shows how people are dealing with the events of the stuff you see in the larger Marvel universe, like, you know, the Battle of New York and stuff, how it's affected the day to day citizens. You know, so, like, in the bigger movies, you don't get to see how it affects the people, but with the Netflix series and stuff, you know, you kind of see how the effects of the bigger Marvel universe has on, you know, the day-to-day lives of the people that's having to live through that shit.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm super stoked, excited. I can't wait to see, you know, what the series has to offer. So, you know, up next is a another film that I am super excited about. You know, we talked about it previously, getting an R rating, so with no further ado, The Killing Joke.
Yes, I mean, it's like the first R-rated DC animated feature, and pretty much actually the first R-rated DC movie. You know, they've announced that there's going to be a direct-to-video, or the video release of Batman v Superman is going to have an R rating. But yeah, this is pretty much the first R-rated thing we're going to be able to see from DC.
Yeah, and I mean, I've really enjoyed a lot of the other, you know, DC animated films. You know,
yeah, everything the DCU is screwing up, the DC animated and DC TV has not had that problem.
Yes, like it's so weird to me, like, you know, why the, you know, DCU for some reason just doesn't seem to get on.
Marvel has Kevin Feige, who is overseeing everything. And the DC Warner Brothers side of it really doesn't have that overall controlling person that fits everything together. And but with the, you know, the animated stuff and the you know, the TV stuff, it just seems like it's a better ran over there than it is in their movie counterparts.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, do you think it has a lot to do with, you know, not using a lot of the creative writers and allowing, you know, those people to come in and, you know, provide their input? And
trying to keep the two separate is a major mistake. And I've seen this, you know, The Killing Joke is produced by, you know, Bruce Timm, the guys who did the original animated series. Not only that, it's voiced by Kevin Conroy and Mark Hamill as the Joker. So it looks like a really dark version of Batman the Animated Series episode. And there's been a lot of talk about that since, like, the last two DC movies have kind of not been very well received, that Zack Snyder may get the boot. And there's been some talk about who should start directing or writing the DCU. And one of the names that, I mean, people have been like, let Bruce Timm. Yeah, you know, he's done such a good job with all the animated stuff. Let him handle the MCU. I mean, the dude knows the characters. He, you know, obviously has, you know, love for the characters. I mean, they're the dudes who invented Harley Quinn. Let them tackle the big screen. I think you would get a lot better product than what we've gotten so far out of the DCU.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I'm still curious to see what Suicide Squad holds. You know, that's probably the one film. You know, Batman vs. Superman and all the hype and the hubbub and everything else, you know, regardless of like it or hate it, that's honestly what I expected out of that film, was, you know, a division of people. And, you know, that's typically what we get. You know, you get a few people that look at it from one perspective that really like it. You get others that, you know, look at it from another perspective that hate it, you know.
And we, you know, also got Affleck directing the solo Batman movie, so.
Oh yeah, I forgot about you know, that and that. So that I think has some high.
Yeah,
hopes.
Because yes. You know, he was the highlight of Batman v Superman, so I'd like to see what he can do without Zack Snyder. so yeah, I'm interested to see that solo film. I think it's going to be a lot. That one I'm actually looking forward to seeing.
So you can check out the official trailer. It has now been released for The Killing Joke. If you're not familiar with it. The Killing Joke is probably one of my favorite
probably one of the darkest Batman stories, too. I mean, this is the one where Barbara Gordon gets shot. The Joker captures Commissioner Gordon and tries to drive him insane. Just basically tortures the shit out of him. I mean, it's there's no way you could have done this story without making it an R rating. I'm glad they didn't
try to
puss
tone
out
it down
and,
or something.
And is giving us what, you know, at least from the trailer, looks like a faithful adaptation of that graphic novel.
Absolutely. So, you know, up next is we got a search for a new director. So any would-be or potential directors out there that would like to get in on The Flash, there is now an opening.
Well, I've not seen it yet. I think it comes out this week. But the Kevin Smith-directed episode of Flash so far has been getting a lot of praise from the people that are actually, you know, involved in the production of Flash. I mean, Kevin, you know, give him a call, dude. Let him come play.
I mean, if there's somebody that knows comic books, it's Kevin Smith. And if there's a guy that's going to do it justice and, you know, can get somebody on board and, you know, talk them into doing a role or casting, I think Kevin could pull it off and do a damn good job at it.
Yeah, and like I said, it's I can't wait to see his episode this week. But yeah, it's from all accounts, it's a pretty badass episode of The Flash. Or, you know, let the people that are doing the TV stuff come on and handle some of these cinematic movies. I mean, they're doing an excellent job on the TV side. You know, let them play with the movie side as well. I mean, don't keep your best people on the bench. Save your cinematic universe if you let the people that know what the fuck they're doing run things.
Yeah, I mean, and they've got some big competition, you know, coming from the Marvel folks, you know. I mean, it's, you know, with Captain America, you know, and I guess we'll just go ahead and segue into that since we've talked about Kevin Smith now. But Kevin Smith has come out and given his thoughts and his review on Captain America Civil War and said it is basically the greatest comic book movie ever made.
Yeah, I have not read anything bad about it by the people that have seen, you know, the early previews of it. It's pretty much getting, you know, widely saying this is like the best thing Marvel has made so far.
Yeah, and I thought it was cool too that you know, the freaking creator of Metal Gear Solid has come out and said it was just an absolute masterpiece. So
yeah, tune into the next episode of Cigar Nerds to hear our opinions on that, because it comes out this upcoming Friday.
Yep, absolutely. So I don't know, man. It's getting a lot of good things. You know, and you know, apparently, you know, folks are praising Tom Holland's performance as Spider-Man.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, I've even seen some interviews with Robert Downey Jr. that he's praising that. Yeah, I still know who the kid is, but apparently he does a real good job. I'm looking forward to, yeah, you know, we've given him a lot of shit, yeah, but yeah,
well, I mean,
I can't wait to see the performance.
I would say a lot of loving shit. I mean, you know, it hasn't been because he's got a bad rap or anything.
It's just no one knows who he is.
I'm not familiar at anything he's done or anything else, so, you know. But that may be a great thing,
yeah.
You know, somebody to come, you have no preconceptions or nothing to really compare them to, so, you know, truly they're getting an unbiased shot at playing this character to the maximum of their capacity.
And have we talked about the announcement of his solo movie? We've got a title for it. We don't really know anything about the plot, but, you know, this is a younger Spider-Man, so we're going to see him in kind of high school-ish, kind of like the current running Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon series. So it's a lot younger than the versions of Spider-Man we've seen in the movies so far. But yeah, the first solo movie is going to be called Spider-Man Homecoming. And there's also, I don't know if it's confirmed or not, but I've heard that supposedly Iron Man is going to be making an appearance in it, or at least, you know, RDJ is Tony Stark, because I don't know if he'll suit up, but yeah, he'll be in the... That's another thing, in the original comic books version of Civil War, this is where Iron Man got his Iron Spider costume that Stark built for him when he joined Team Iron Man. So, I don't know, hell, maybe we'll get an Iron Spider in the Spider-Man Homecoming series.
Ooh, that would be interesting. Or, I don't know, I mean, you know, we have Civil War, you know, maybe you know, some of the laters, you know, maybe we get the Infinity War or something, or, you know.
I'd like to see an Iron Spider. That'd be pretty
like
badass.
I'm wondering if that's when, like, truly everybody is going to, we're going to see a lot of the badass variations of the characters. You know, we get the Iron Spider. I mean, we've already seen, you know, Stark in the Hulkbuster armor a little bit and stuff, but, you know, I'd like to see that make a debut again.
I mean, and now that he's officially MCU, maybe we'll finally get a good version of Venom on the big screen.
Man, you know, that's another character that I feel like just does not get enough, you know, screen time or anything, is Venom. I've always loved the Venom character, and
or even with S.H.I.E.L.D. and everything, Agent Venom would be a cool character, which was Venom when he finally, you know, connected with someone that was actually a perfect match. So the symbiote didn't take over that person's personality. It just kind of made him a badass. And he, you know, in some of the comics, you know, he actually was like an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Absolutely. And then up next, so for the upcoming Tomb Raider film, I've always liked the Tomb Raider games for some reason.
Yeah.
But we have found our Lara Croft, apparently. It is going to be actress from Machina's, it's Alicia Vikander.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with her.
So, yeah, I don't know. As far as the Tomb Raider film actually being on the big screen, stuff like that, I mean, like I said, I've enjoyed the games. I think it could do a big screen adaptation if done properly, so.
And that last game that came out, I've not played it, but it looks pretty cool. I've heard good things about it, so, you know, that could be a, you know, a version of that storyline as well, because, you know, looks like a lot, you know, younger character than what we've, or younger actress than what we've had previously, so they may be going down that, you know, kind of new origin story of Lara Croft.
Yeah, I don't know, you know, I mean, originally we had Angelina Jolie that was doing some of the movie adaptations in the past. I mean, but we haven't really had a Tomb Raider film since, you know, the 2003 film, you know, which was The Cradle of Life. The one prior to that was 2001, just Lara Croft Tomb Raider. So, I mean, both of those films, I mean, you know, grossed a combined $432 million worldwide. So, I mean, I'd say that's worth something, you know. So you were asking, yeah, not familiar with Alicia and some of the stuff. So basically she had appeared in The Danish Girl, The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Yeah, I never did see that.
So, I don't know. You know, something to keep our eyes on. So, all right. And apparently she's also going to be starring in the upcoming Jason Bourne film. So, any other news or anything you got?
I think that's about it. One thing we you know, talked about in our interview segment earlier, but Range 15 coming out June 15th. If you want to get tickets for that, because they're kind of pre-selling it through a thing called Tug, which basically they won't show the movie unless a minimum amount of tickets get sold. We have bought our tickets, and as of this recording, they still need to sell another 24 tickets to make this show happen. So please go to Tug.com. It shows everywhere that it's showing in your local area. If you're in the Atlanta area like us, we're planning to attend the Duluth showing at Studio Movie Grill.
Yep.
Rhino will be there, so if you want to come see the movie with us, go get some tickets for that. And if you're kind of in the Alpharetta area, the showing at the other Studio Movie Grill was almost sold out last I checked on it. So if you don't want to come see it with us, go see it. There, but you need to get your tickets quick before it sells out. Or, like I said, 24 more people, go buy your tickets so we can go see it when it comes to Atlanta. And with that, check us out on our Facebook page. Check us out on Instagram and Twitter at Cigar Nerd Pod. Go to our website, cigarnerdpodcast.com. Check us out on the ESO network at esopodcast.com. Go get some shirts at Real Men Smoke Cigars or our Zazzle store. And with that, Sic vis pecum parabellum. If you want peace, prepare for war. We out! And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast. We're your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
Yeah. This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.